Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters and a Twisted Mister or Two. I am Pam Ray. I hope everyone is having just a wonderful day and evening. And hi, Lawrence. How's it going?
Good, Pam. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, I always look forward to every show, but, you know, Tuesdays are wonderful because every week it's something just new and different and fun, and, you know, I get to hang out with, of course, as always, cool poets, you know, like you, Jean, and others, just to name a few. So, Jean's computer or whatever decided to start rebooting just minutes before the show. I'm not quite sure she's with us. I'll do a check. And this is my technical check. Hey, Jean, are you with us? I'll take that as a no. All right. Don't you just love the way I technically handle things?
it's great technique, I think.
Right? Exactly. Well, tonight we are going to be delving into poetry inspired by the artwork of Anthony Gormley. Anthony Gormley is a British artist whose actually 72nd birthday is the day after tomorrow, August 30th. So, happy birthday to him. He's most known for his sculpture, The Angel of the North, which is in the northern part of, oh gosh, I wrote this down because I never want to remember details, so I have to write things down. Ah, yes, Angel of the North in Gateshead, which is in the north part of England. He's with his sculptures, a lot of them, the life-size ones. He makes the Angel of the North and some other ones are extremely, like, tall, like, huge, and the other ones are life-size, and a lot of the life-size ones, he actually used casts of his own body to make them, and one of the most important things besides the sculpture itself is the placement of the sculpture. A lot of his artwork gets its message across by where it is placed.
I tell you what, that one, I think it's called Block, the one prompt there, those huge cubes. I couldn't get behind that at all.
I totally get that. It was one of the different ones. I found the concept of that one interesting because of the fact that it's actually supposed to represent the human body, but more like the inside of the human body. And you can actually not only stand on the outside and observe it, but you can also walk through it like a maze. However, you know, compared to some of the other ones, like I think emotionally, I don't know, you might agree with me. I think a lot of the other ones emotionally were more appealing. But, yeah. The thing was, though, is I came across this article that you probably saw. I posted a link in the contest, 10 Sculptures by Anthony Gormley that you should see. And that was one of them that was listed in the article. And I figured, you know, why skip any? Besides, you never know what's going to inspire people.
Right. You know, it's a very, very English name, Gormley. In fact,
it really is, isn't it?
For some reason, I can imagine that somewhere that sits the Gormley Castle.
You know, you're probably right. Well, ironically, his father is of Irish descent, and his mother is German. But they moved to England, I'm guessing, at some point the family did. But, yeah, it is really English.
Yeah.
Sounding name. And, all right, I have gone ahead and brought a couple people on. Hello, Tom, and hello, Catherine. I'm glad you could both join us.
Hello.
Hey, Tom and Kevin.
Yeah, good to have you with here. And, hey, Gene, are you with us? All right.
I am.
Yes.
How about you, Gene?
Damn, Eugene must have done it. There you go. I like that. Oh, my God. Hello, everybody. It's good to have everybody here. I'm glad to be here finally. What a crazy way to start everything off.
Right.
I was hoping to change the music because it wasn't quite working. But,
It was funny because I waited for about a minute of letting Lou's song play, and I was like, huh, I think something's up. Maybe I should switch the song. Computers take the worst times to reboot.
Honest to God, well, you know, I can't even begin to tell you, but it's about my fifth time today. I'm getting frustrated. But anyway, back to the name Gormley. I have to laugh because I have relatives by the name of Gormley. And I think that was kind of funny. I'm like, look at the name I'm going.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, kind of interesting. But I don't know all their background because they're, I have to, ask somebody. So,
right.
But anyway, I'm going to be quiet now because I'm just a phone girl tonight. Yay! Yeah.
All right.
I'll be around. Thanks.
Good. Always good to have you around and know you're in the background. Thank you. All right. We're going to go ahead and start out with a short classic poem. I Saw a Man Pursuing the Horizon by Stephen Maria Crane. And Laurent, will you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly will. One second. Moving slow tonight. Fuzzy, slow. All right. This is by Stephen Maria Crane. I Saw a Man Pursuing the Horizon. I saw a man pursuing the horizon. Round and round they sped. I was disturbed at this. I accosted the man. It is futile, I said. You can never. You lie, he cried. Ran on. End poem.
Great read there, Lauren. Yeah, and I have to say, I chose this because one of the pieces of artwork, well, actually an installation of several pieces of artwork, was titled Event Horizon, and so I just searched the word horizon. It's a little shorter than I usually choose for a classic poem, but I thought there was something both fun and thought-provoking for it. And, of course, as I think most people know, but in case they don't, Stephen Maria Crane was most well-known for a novel, as a novelist, particularly writing the book The Red Badge of Courage. And Tom, I could tell you got a kick out of this short little poem. So what are your thoughts?
Well, the first thing that made me think of is the fact that, my password is the last 12 numbers of the solution to pi.
Oh, wow.
It's just like you find somebody who believes in the flat earth, I tell them that you'll believe it when they walk off it.
Right? Oh, that's funny.
That's the first kind of thing I think of, because he's right. You know, it's like some people, chase certain dreams. They're never going to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Yep. Some people are somewhat too realistic, and some people are too much have their heads in the cloud. And it's
right.
Fun, it's interesting to see both kinds of people represented. And
I'm sure there's people you can think of now who, the minute you tell them what the truth is, and they go, "You lie," they'll think of this poem.
Right. Mm. Exactly. And I like how this just simply it just ended almost very abruptly with just that thought. It didn't continue on into a further, any sort of debate or anything. I suppose part of that's because the guy ran on. But great comment there, Tom. And Kathy, your thoughts?
Oh, this is interesting. You know, what struck me is the round and round they spin. Now, the horizon stays still, actually. It's always there. It's the man that's pursuing it, that's moving. And, you know, it's like if he were to just stand still, he'd be on the horizon, right?
Absolutely.
He would be.
Yeah, that is a really good point.
Yeah, he would be on the horizon. But instead, he just goes on like a gerbil on a wheel. you know, it is futile. You could never. And then he says, "You lie." He cried and ran on.
Yep.
So, you know, there are some people who just don't get it. They just don't. And
straight
so
up.
It's sad but true. And anyway, thanks for letting me share on this. That was my take on it.
Well, great observations. Thank you. And Lauren, your thoughts?
Well, it's a nice piece. And it proves that you should never get between a man and the futility of his dreams. It will not be appreciated.
Absolutely. Well said there, Lawrence. And, yeah, I have to agree with Robbie when he says sharp ending there. So, great comments, mm-hmm. everybody. And up next we have I Stand by Deborah Jo. And, Kathy, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Let me refresh right here. I Stand by Deborah Jo. I stand on an empty beach as the morning breaks in, as the first tide and the onrush of the waves on my toes. A tingling of the cold water wakes me up. I am made anew. The first sun rays upon my face, I feel the purity of a new day. A new beginning, another chance is given, a blessing from above, to be alive this day, to start life all over again. End poem.
Great read there, Catherine, and the wonderful write, Deborah. I really like the positive tone of this write. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
A new day, a new morning, the onrush of waves, a tingle of the cold water. When you're half asleep sometimes in the morning, let's say you live on the beach, in a beach house, and you wake up in a fog from too much partying the night before. I have gone down to the water's edge and looked at it, calculated the effect of plunging into the water, and then doing it and bursting to the top, sputtering in the cold water, but feeling brand new. So, yeah, this poem absolutely hits the nail on the head.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. Wonderful comment there. And, Tom, your thoughts?
I really like the opening. I stand on an empty beach as the morning breaks in. It's just the way it hits you, too, it comes up over the horizon. As the first tide and the onrush of waves on my toes, it's really funny. This really strikes me as an East Coast poem in a sense because of that. As the morning breaks in, because the way it's, the sun comes up over the horizon. When I was on the West Coast, everything came up over the mountains in the morning. And you're on the beach, and it was sunsets on the beach that were really the big thing. But I really like the whole thing about the waves and the toes, the tingling of the cold water, because that in itself is a rush all its own. And she really catches the details really nicely, and it's like quick splashes of water on the face, so that when you get to the second verse, you're really ready for the almost like the morning prayer to the sun god, and the new day and the world begins again. It's really very pretty.
Absolutely. Well said there. And Kathy, your thoughts?
It's interesting that this is I Stand, and the last poem was about somebody rushing onward toward a horizon. She stands at the waves. She stands, and she just allows the cold water to come to her and make her awake and aware, and then the sun comes on her face after perhaps a brisk onrush of wind from the sea, you know. And it's a very spiritual poem, I thought. And very, very inspiring. And you know, forgive me, guys, words elude me these days. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because I'm 64. But anyway.
Well, I think you're doing a great job at commenting. So you're certainly finding the right words, because you're correct. This is a very spiritual poem. And I think you made a great observation there about how the last poem was about rushing forward. And this one is just simply about standing still. And I think within that standing still comes the spirituality and the idea of appreciating the moment. So, great comment. And, Lauren, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
I did give a partial comment initially, I believe.
Oh, you did? Oh,
yeah.
Goodness. Okay. All right. My apology. Okay. Tom, did I have you comment?
Yeah, you had me comment. I talked about how, you know, between the West Coast and the East Coast.
That's right. That's right. Okay. All right. Goodness gracious.
Getting late already, huh?
Yeah, right. Well, I found this an absolutely beautiful brevity. The interesting thing about this contest, is that the majority of the poems written for this are brevities. So, which I always appreciate a strong brevity, but it takes a bit more creativity sometimes to delve into them and each person come up with a different comment or observation, which of course, you know, is always just part of the fun of it. And, you know, I did like the imagery within it, and especially the in the first stanza and the spirituality in it, and especially in the second stanza, of just really appreciating the blessings of that day, the blessings of the day starting. And for me, two of the most beautiful sunsets I've ever seen is one over the Pacific Ocean in California, and then another one, the other most beautiful one I ever saw was over the Grand Canyon. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely stunning. All right. Let's see what we have next. All right. Up next we have Golden Echoes by Betty Page. And I'll go ahead and give that a read. And it goes like this. Mirrors reflecting picturesque memories, flight and golden echoes, lost within silence, drowning in my convictions, Catholic bells toll. Drawbridges pulled up, no new roses, all trampled by my own damn mouth. Here I am silent, watching you just walk away, wishing you'll come back. Mirrors reflecting, picturesque memories, flight and golden echoes, lost within silence, drowning in my convictions, Catholic bells toll, and poem. And she actually wrote to prompt two, which, if I remember right, was the picture of the statue standing in the middle of the cathedral. Yes, it was called Sound Two, and absolutely a beautiful light. And Tom, your thoughts?
I was looking at the picture and looking at this and the whole thing about the mirrors reflecting picturesque memories of flight. The use of echoes, then it's, you know, in golden echoes, but the next verse is golden Catholic bells toll. The use of the bells and the echoes and the sense of I'm trying to find the right word. I want to say the holiness. You know, you get into certain spaces and the spirituality of the place, your sense of being in the place sort of holds you. And in this, when she gets to the middle two and she tries to talk about her need to talk and her mouth getting, her own thoughts getting in the way, this whole being lost in the silence just sort of echoes to me the fact that of being caught up in feelings and senses and in the moment that's so much larger than she is, that she has lost the ability to capture it all within, so she's left without words. It's a very, God, this sounds horrible, very reflective piece. But, you know, in terms of the way it moves around in sort of the internal thoughts of the poet, it's a rather striking piece.
Yeah, I have to agree. It really is one of those pieces that where you feel like somebody is lost or, like, captured in the moment. And then all of a sudden, like, one of those moments, as you mentioned, where you just feel absolutely speechless. And so just absolutely excellent comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, if it's the image I think it is, it really does exemplify silence. I mean, absolute quiet, which is exactly what she exhibits. She's lost within silence, you know, as he walks away, even though she wishes he'd come back. Because unfortunately, she's drowning in her convictions. Her convictions may be those of the Catholic Church, Catholic bells toll, and whatever opportunity she had gone now due to her potential, let's say, refusal to comply with his wishes, because she is lost in her convictions. She is rigid. She will not yield to temptation, perhaps. I like the way she gave us the Catholic bells tolling in a couple of different places, drowning in her convictions. And that silence that she let extend is a perfect reflection, pardon the pun, of the prompt.
It really is. It really is. And I have to agree with the repeating of the Catholic bells toll. It really had a poignancy to it. So excellent comment. And Kathy, your thoughts?
Very well done. Very well done. And I like the repetitive mirrors reflecting picturesque memories, light and golden echoes, lost in silence, drowning in my conviction, Catholic bells all. And it's an interesting visual, definitely, too. You know, it's like she wants something that maybe the Catholic beliefs that she might harbor are in at odds with. And then Drawbridge's pulled up. So she's a like a castle, like a tower in herself. No new roses, I'll travel on my own damn mouth. So, you know, here I am silent, watching you just walk away, wishing you'd come back. It is, I could read this over again and really get a sense of, you know, the intensity of that feeling, that moment, you know, when she knows that her drawbridges are up and there's no returning for this person that she loves. So, anyway, it's very well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, great comments. I have, this is such a beautiful, poignant, and thought-provoking write. And I really like the line, no new roses, all trampled by my own damn mouth. You know, sometimes our own mouth is our own worst enemy, whether it's because it says what shouldn't be said or it doesn't speak when it should be speaking up. And I like how this is that struggle between what the person wants and trying to stick rigidly to their personal convictions. And another great, is great stanzas all the way through, but another one I really like is mirrors reflecting picturesque memories, flight in golden echoes. Just beautiful lines and very well done. And let's see what we have.
Yeah, I've got to leave in 15 minutes, just so you know. I put it up on the board.
What I figure is I have one I'm going to put up for Tom to read and we'll comment on, and then if you're all right with that, we'll go ahead and move on to yours after that one. And up next we have Augmentations Against Reality by Poetic Creations. And Tom, will you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. Augmentations Against Reality by Poetic Creations. Building blocks are the stuff of life. Matter that matters. All matters do matter, mingling amongst cluttered clatter. Bloody mattresses stained in another bloody massacre, walking corpses dead on the inside. It's all just a blur. Learning curve, I'm a free bird flying above the framework, a broken system in a broken society. No fine marble is found. Rough chisel marks in temple walls, stone Buddhas sit amongst pieces of lost pottery and yellow daffodils, while morning glories fade in the fall, too dusty to rise, in chapels built to suit only the rich, but thrive in dirt. End poem.
Great read, Tom, and just an excellent write, PC. I have to say, I just think this has some really powerful imagery within it. And Catherine, your thoughts?
What this made me think of is the sculpture model. And it was actually written about the troubles in Belfast. Building blocks are the stuff of life. Matter that matters, no matters do matter, mingling amongst cluttered clatter. Bloody mattresses stained in another's bloody massacre, walking corpses dead on the inside. It's all just a blur. you know, that is very evocative of Belfast and the Troubles. Very well done, Tom. I really like this poem. It's dark, but at the same time, it, you know, while morning fades, glories fade in the fall, too dusty to rise in chapels built to suit only the rich, but thrive in dirt. Wow. That says a lot. That says a lot right there.
Absolutely.
I'd like to really read this again and maybe comment on it in the comment section, Tom. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to read all these before the show. So.
Oh, well, there's always time after. But, yeah, really great observations there. And, yeah, one of the things with the artist, Anthony Gormley, is he doesn't shy away from making artwork that deals with social issues. And I do believe that PC has captured some of the vibe within the artwork with his lines. So great observation there, Kathy. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I'm drawn in particular to two stanzas, the learning curve, I'm a free bird flying above the framework, a broken system and a broken society, no fine marble is found. Sometimes we are not prisoners of the society in which we live. We've found a way to fly above or below or to either side the broken system. And then the last stanza, while morning glories fade in the fall, too dusty to rise, and chapels built to suit only the rich but thrive in dirt. And I think it speaks about the importance of real things, real beauty, in this case, the morning glories, which will grow almost anywhere, but they won't grow in chapels built to suit only the rich, because morning glories are for everybody, and those morning chapels are sometimes a little too sterile to really grow anything that has any lasting beauty. Now, that's what I get from it on the one hand, but then the discussion of Belfast and the lack of a prop here leaves me a little bit uncertain as to the whole intent, but I'll take your words for it.
Absolutely. And, you know, that is a good point, Lauren. And that is one of the reasons I ask people to put their chosen prompt, even if it's more than one, because I don't mind if people are, but, you know, it's nice to have a reference so that it opens up, I think, more for a discussion. So, yeah, but I like that thought there of how you mentioned that, you know, the it's too sterile of an environment for lasting beauty to grow. So that was a great observation. And and Tom, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, I like the way he starts, because he's really saying that, you know, whether it's the object itself that matters or the fact that we make everything matter and end up becoming hoarding, you know, nightmares. It all has an effect. It all counts in its own way. And the second stanza feels like, you know, even there he's speaking not just about war, but about the effects of and the scars of war, and the way that oftentimes the children of a war where the parents are slaughtered are the corpses walking. It just, I found myself getting, even while I was reading it, getting really caught up in the texture of his imagery and how it spoke so much to trying to create perfection in an deeply imperfect world instead of dealing with the reality that's right before us, especially that next to last verse where he talks about the rough chisel marks and temple walls, stone Buddhas sit amongst pieces of lost pottery and yellow daffodils. Often we forget that the things we create may not be as beautiful and perhaps do not need as much attention or as much time as we should take to appreciate what's already there for us to enjoy.
Oh, absolutely. That is a really great observation. I like how you mentioned the texture of the poem, because I have to agree that it's a perfect word to describe some of these lines. And, you know, the second stanza is particularly dark, but really just captures your attention. Bloody mattresses stained in another bloody massacre, walking corpses dead on the inside. It's all just a blur. And, you know, that captures the vividness of violence, the blood, but then again it captures the, as you said, Tom, the kind of the aftermath, the emotional aftermath of dealing with that. And you know, I like how this, the all the way through, but that ending stanza also with the whole idea that you know, the morning glories are best suited to thrive in dirt. Sometimes some of our most memorable blessings are meant to thrive in dirt. So just a powerful write all the way through, and very well done. And all right. And Kathy, I have your poem up, so go ahead, give it a read for us, please.
Okay. Okay. Rattle and hum, frigid like an ice sculpture in the bowels of Pluto, an iceberg in a fjord, and yet having no more substance than the armature, a wind chime of liquid nitrogen. Gusty ghosts whistle in harmony with the shuddering of the Borealis, hunkered down with no more means than a pocket full of metal shavings, a derelict who has pushed his shopping cart all the way to the point of no return. Now he sits begging, so he'll have enough to hobble hunched to be a high wire to rattle and end poem.
Great read there, Kathy. Wow, I like the statue you chose to write to. And, oh my goodness, so much wonderful imagery. And I like that you referenced that, you know, the because it's near in the area where there's the fjord. So I like the use of the word fjord. And, oh my goodness. I just, you know what, I'm going to gather my thoughts and get the gentleman to comment first, because there really is a lot I like about this. And Tom, your thoughts.
I was just reading the first two verses over again, because they play off of each other so nicely. The frigid like an ice sculpture in the bowels of Pluto. You know, it's almost an alien creature, and yet it has a certain substance, and it becomes an iceberg in a fjord, which is almost, you know, only occurs if there's a glacier at the end where it's breaking off and dropping into the fjord. Yet having no more substance than an armature, a wind chime of liquid oxygen, nitrogen. And I like that, because there's by calling it no more substance than armature, there's so much that it can acquire, it can become. And so it fits so nicely into that gusty ghost whistle in harmony with the shuddering of the aurora borealis. So we look at the statue, and all of a sudden we find that it has substance. It's there for us to discover. there to surprise us. And this one to start looking at just how little do we have and how much are we creating for ourselves? And how much are we allowing being stolen from who we are, from our possibilities? And because for many of us, we are no more than an armature. We're a possibility waiting for an event to suddenly transform us. So many of us seem to be deeply caught up in a belief of magic, the magic that somehow somebody else does something, we'll be the ones that change. And it seems to catch a whole lot of this otherworldliness that we bring to our own lives. Really a lot to think about right here. Very well done, Kathy.
Thank you. Thank you, Todd.
Great comment there, Tom. Wonderful observations. This was, the statue called Exposure was actually put on a thin piece of land between the Dutch town of Lelystad and the sea. And with time, as the water level rises, the sculpture will gradually be buried in water. So I think that was an interesting tidbit about the statue itself, and I think you've captured some of that sense of loneliness. Laurent, your thoughts?
I saw a number of people had written to this particular prompt, and I was tempted to as well. We have the framework of a man, not the complete body, but that internal framework that needs to be clothed, that needs skin. It needs to be something, somebody, not just the shape, a potential shape. And so I've got to agree with what Tom said about going through all the issues and problems that we have. But I don't know. I think there's a little bit of humor in here. We have someone who's been described as a derelict who's pushed his shopping cart all the way to the point of no return. So really, we have a person at the last end of his, at the end of his life, at the end of anything he's achieved. He can't go any further at this point. So he sits begging. And it's aspirational. He'll have enough to be a high wire, to rattle and to hum. And if you've ever seen a high wire rattling in the wind and humming with the power of the electricity, it's alive, it's vivid, it's something strong, something to be feared, something to be dependent on. And he's none of those things, but that's what he'd like to be. Mm-hmm. I hope I didn't misinterpret this, but I thought it was excellent.
Thank you. Yeah, you interpreted it very well. Thanks. And he smoked a few pipes, middle pipes.
What, he had a morning blunt?
Yeah, he had a morning blunt. That's right.
Well, I have to say, absolutely a stunning write. I really like Hunker Down with No More Means and a Pocket Full of Metal Shavings, the derelict who has pushed his shopping cart all the way to the point of no return. And I really like that you use in the title and in the line, to be a high wire, to rattle and hum. There's such a kind of almost feeling of, I don't know if uselessness or what, it's like just the idea of making noises, simply rattling and humming, that doesn't really seem to, get any message across. I think this is just an excellent write all the way through and just very well done.
Thank you. All right, folks, I'm going to go ahead and sign off now. Thank you for your commentary and for the wonderful writes we've had tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling in, Kathy. It's
been a very enjoyable evening. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night. All right, Lawrence.
You too.
put your poem up. Go ahead and get it read for us, please.
Okay. This is called Silent Reflections. Bas relief, carved like a stone flower that never nods its head, posed like a silent slab, art in the eye of the beholder. The hush of three dimensions swallows me, a statue wallow. Up and down makes no sound. My leaden livery freezes my expression. Life is a single lived page, unturned vellum, static ennui venturing nowhere. Safe as bricks, concrete need not apply. If I could but tickle the air like a cricket rubbing wings, or voice my loneliness as the wolf does, uncorking his soul at a silver moon, there might be an excuse for me. But as a dull pout, I have no known skill. Yet I have tenure, stone-faced, perusing life in one dimension, as still as a heron, ankle-deep, standing in its silent reflections. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Lawrence. I really like that you chose to write to this and that you wrote in such beautiful couplets, and you captured the emotion that is conveyed to me in the artwork, but I felt like you were also writing from something that is held within yourself. And Tom, your thoughts?
I really love that opening line. Bas-relief carved like a stone flower that never nods its head. It captures a sense of stillness seeking life. And so much of what's in here is speaking to the moments before awakening. You know, if I could tickle the air like a cricket's rubbing wings, there might be an excuse for me, but as a dilettante, I have no known skills.
Gesundheit.
Oh, no, I got to go get a throat clogging. Get my meds tearing up my throat. But the joys of lisinopril. But I really like the way this takes silence and gives it another viewpoint, like that silence of waiting to become, that silence of trying to maintain a posture and a look without acknowledging the fact that there's nothing to be said. Because the two playing back and forth across each other creates a certain wry humor, but at the same time also creates a sense of appealing that, you know, let's get on with it, people. So
absolutely.
It's not quite, you know, so I like that kind of sharp vision that sits behind all this. Now I got to run and go get a cough drop.
Okay. Well, I have to say, I really like what Tom had to say about, you know, capturing a different perspective of silence, the silence waiting to become, which then made me think of the book, the children's story, The Velveteen Rabbit, which, you know, there's nothing a childlike about this poem, but it does kind of capture that whole idea of someone captured within the solitude, within the brick, you know, within the material that can't move, and wishing to be able to move. I really like the opening line, fast relief, carved like a stone flower that never nods its head, posed like a silent slab, art in the eye of the beholder. Such an important line and so true. Also, I really like, if I could but tickle the air like a cricket rubbing wings, or voice my loneliness as the wolf does, uncorking his soul at a silver moon. What a wonderful choice of words, uncorking his soul. You know, I just, you feel the longing and you feel the loneliness, at least I do, within those lines, and the wish for something more. So just a wonderful write all the way through, Laurent, and very well done. And was there anything that you'd like to say about your poem?
Yeah, I thought that I would try and use the reflections in the water as an important part of the story. I mean, I called it Silent Reflections. Now, it could be written, I kind of wrote it from the point of view of the statue itself, personifying it, but that's not necessarily, you know, the way it needs to be interpreted. It could be almost anyone who is living kind of a static life. And, you know, when I say the hush of three dimensions swallows me, he's surrounded, of course, by three dimensions of reality. Yet the reflection is a single dimension, as most reflections are. I think I can say that. And the ankle-deep standing in its silent reflection both describes the picture and describes what he's going through, thinking, perusing life, a prisoner of where he is, perhaps. So that's kind of what I was going for.
Oh, I like that. I like that you personified the statue. But as you say, you know, that's the wonderful thing about poetry, is oftentimes it can be interpreted in different ways. And let's see. I was going to put Tom's poem up next, but I do want to give him time to...
I'm back, and I'm good.
Oh, you're back. Okay, good.
Yeah.
And I will go ahead and grab your poem and put that up for you. I just wanted to make sure you had enough time to take care of your throat.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just part of life.
Oh, I totally get that. All right. So I put your poem up, Tom. Go ahead and give your read for us, please.
What you see, taken all at once, I am pretty obvious. It is in the details where I begin to fall apart. There is no long or short of it, just all the complications that never made a good story, so we're never told, whether in a bar or on a couch. I am, still, all you get. It may not be clear how little that is. Everyone expects more. There isn't any. End poem.
Great read, Tom, and what a wonderful brevity. I like that you wrote to the header picture. You know, to me, first of all, I have to say, just really like the humor of ending a brevity of with everyone expects more, there isn't any. I also like how, you know, this is kind of a whole general message to me of what you see is what you get. But one of the things I particularly like that you brought up in this brevity is whether in a bar or on a couch, I am still all you get. It just may not be clear. Sometimes, you know, I think people see us how they want to see us, but I like that you, you know, brought up both the bar and the couch because, you know, whether you're talking to the sympathetic ear of the bartender or you're talking to a therapist, you're unveiling pieces of yourself, one in a more formal environment and one in a not-so-formal environment. But it's interesting how there's always kind of specific, jobs that people have that draw people to talking to them, obviously a therapist. But then, you know, the hairdresser, the bartender, you know, everybody seems to most people seem to open up to people in those fields. So I just thought this was a strong brevity all the way through and very entertaining and very well done. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
Certainly. I think I've mentioned in the past, Pam, that you usually manage to say exactly what I was going to say. So I can't disagree with a single thing that you said. But I would like to take a close look at the picture and then the first four lines. Taken all at once, I'm pretty obvious, and there stands a normal person. It is in the details where I begin to fall apart. And now we have these two figures next to you, which do resemble the human form quite well, as a matter of fact. And probably the further away you get, the more human it looks. But as you begin to zoom in on those details, and what looks human starts to look less and less human or less and less recognizable as what it is, and that's where I begin to fall apart. So he takes the picture and then works it really into the mentality of people and what they appear to be, how much or how little there is in that individual. But when you get up close, and everybody expects more, they find out that there really isn't any. So, great piece.
Absolutely.
You also know
I'm glad
behind
you...
him, there's all that complication.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And, the thing is, Lawrence, that's why I commented first, because I knew if I let you comment first, you'd just say everything that I wanted to say.
And since you're in charge.
Right. great comment there. Tom, did you want to say anything about your right?
No, this was all very tongue in cheek. I mean, there is no longer sort of, it's just all the complications that never made a good story. To me, that's sort of the heart and soul of the whole thing, it's because in a sense you see him in the picture and all that complicated, pen and ink stuff going on behind him. And then the two statues, as Laurent so well described, it can be quite fascinating to some people, and they want to understand everything. And sometimes it is in the trying to understand that the confusion starts. I mean, it is, don't understand it, just accept it. It is exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, I like that. I like that you had fun with that, right?
Oh, yeah, it was.
Very
sort of
cool.
Gave itself up.
All right. And up next we have Both Sides Now by Eric Svensson. And we do have a recording for that one. So, Dean, whenever you're ready, go ahead and push play.
Both Sides Now. Met Joni Mitchell at Winchester Cathedral. Watched her study A Silver Rain Man. Inner soliloquy emanated from sculptured contemplation. Rainwater rose, flooded in a courtyard. Silent man stood in restful ruse. Tears from heaven seemed to infuse, imbue an inner glow on a cloudy, cold, rainy day in May. Secretly pondered if Rain Man thought of rose and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. Sure, he looked at clouds that way. Mind reader Joni Mitchell smiled. corrected second guessing. Deep drag on cigarette before husky voice retorted. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds, illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds at all. Break in rain allowed light to fall. Salient sunshaft lit up silver man's head. Thought he interned. Moons and junes and ferris wheels. The dizzy dancing way you feel as every fairy tale comes real. I've looked at love that way. Joni Mitchell adamantly shook her head, determined like a wet dog to dry itself. Her voice smoldered, drove away rain chill as she spoke. I've looked at love from both sides now, from give and take, and still somehow it's love's illusions I recall. I really don't know love at all. Ensconced between sultry singer and perfect rain man harbinger reflection, caught between precise as above so below mirror image, Winchester Cathedral courtyard extracted a long-awaited confession from a happy hooker hippie heretic. Took a long haul deep breath, waited for thunderclap, not forthcoming, I spilled the beans. Tears and fears and feeling proud to say, I love you right out loud. Dreams and schemes and circus crowds. I've looked at life that way. End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Just to remind everyone, if you can't call in, but you can make a recording of your poem, that is the next best thing, because then we get to hear your poetry and your voice. I just thought this was fun and delightful, the way he created a conversation that used the song lyrics from Joni Mitchell's song, Both Sides Now. And Tom, your thoughts?
Oh, it's a wonderful mashup. To treat it all like a conversation between himself, Joni Mitchell, the silent statue, and Winchester Cathedral itself. It takes a vivid imagination and a great sense of humor, and he accomplished a great deal in this. I'll never be able to listen to the song the same way again, but he's enhanced it in every possible way, in a sense. Great job. Just wonderful job.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. It does make you look at the song in a whole new way. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yes, it's really quite a skillful piece to take Joni Mitchell's song and use it to establish a dialogue between the Silver Rain Man and herself. And as you guys said, you know, it really makes you look at that song in a different way. But I've always loved that song because it does encourage you to, dreams and schemes and circus crowds. I've looked at life that way, the ways that one looks at life, that one looks at love, how you live, what surprises you, what doesn't surprise you. But if I had to pick one thing, it would be secretly pondered if Rain Man thought of Rose and Foes, of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. Did he go look at clouds that way? And then the stanza following, where mind reader Joni Mitchell smiled, corrected second-guessing, deep drag on cigarette, before husky voice retorted, it really establishes her presence strongly in that place, looking at that silver Rain Man. And all of a sudden we have that inner soliloquy that emanates from sculptured contemplation, which is a great line from the first stanza. Very, very skillful. Never would have thought of using the song that way.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. I have to agree. That's a wonderful comment. It is a skillful write that is both thought-provoking and has wonderful touches of humor. And it was really cool the way he used the song. And I really like mind reader Joni Mitchell smiled, corrected second-guessing, deep drag on cigarette, do her husky voice retorted. I like the line corrected second-guessing because too often time, instead of taking time to listen, we're always guessing. Midway between sultry singer and perfect Rain Man's pious reflection arrested by his presence, so as above, so below, mirror image. I just like the way this is seems to be about two different personalities expressing their view on life and love in general. And it's just an excellent thoughtful write all the way through and very well done. And let's see what we got next. All right. All right. Up next, I've got Home by Naomi Sarah, and we have a recording for that one. So, Gene, whenever you're ready.
Holes, rushing around the aisles, grasping for things, looking for something, hungry for something, I don't know what, but something that can't be found on shelves. Something to plug the holes inside. Settling for a sponge cake filled with airy spaces so I can finally breathe a while. In the crowded parking lot, yet feeling so alone, I stare into a two-filled cart. On top lays the withered flowers bought for no one in particular, and I stand there, struggling to put some sense into the garbled mess. I see an old student of mine and shovel up words to bury the emptiness, looking for laughter that's not my own. Turning into the street, I stop beside that gutter, suddenly overfilled with the unbearable sadness of losing a dime. Through the hard, heavy bars, into black nothingness below. Behind me a car honks. I hear the wheels grinding. Something better's coming. And I wonder, where are you going to? May I come? Anywhere. Anywhere but now. Needing to feel in my bones the rhythmic pulses like temperate rain on a tin roof. Soothing the beat of my heart, wanting to go and to expand, to flow through the world at an even metronomic pace, to find a place of balance. As I keep running wildly in circles, teasing out the dark corners of individual pieces to a whole puzzle, pieces missing. The puzzle always incomplete, disjointedly interlocking around holes.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you so much for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. I just think it's absolutely a stunning piece of work. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
There's such a sense of loneliness in this, a sense of melancholy, a sense of being filled with empty spaces, as the poem refers to. And then to use the analogy of shopping, rushing around the aisles, grasping for things, looking for something, hungry for something, I don't know what, but something that can't be found on shelves, something just plug the holes inside. And I think that's an important thought, because so often we buy things to make ourselves feel better, or we do things to make ourselves feel better. And those aren't what is required to fill the empty spaces. And then the thoughts, and I wonder, where are you going to? May I come anywhere, anywhere but now? You know, the life that the individual is living at this point is really one of quiet desperation almost. And there's a need to feel life, to feel in my bones the rhythmic pulses, to find a place of balance. And instead of finding that balance, we have somebody who keeps running wildly in circles, teasing out the dark corners of individual pieces to a whole puzzle, the puzzle always incomplete, not really all that solid around the holes, the puzzle always incomplete, disjointedly interlocking around holes. You know, we get to a place in life where we don't really want to admit that we're not at all happy, that we may even feel depressed. And what do we do about emotions like that? Well, that's a long-standing question. I guess there's all kinds of things to do, but in this case, there was no resolution to that, simply the observation that the puzzle is always incomplete. Difficult to solve, perhaps impossible to solve, who knows. But as you said, excellent work of art.
Absolutely. And that was a wonderful comment and observation. You're right, it does have such a sense of loneliness and desperation to it. And it is oftentimes difficult to come to those points in our life where we feel like we feel empty and we feel like there's got to be something more out there. But we don't quite know what or what we are supposed to be going towards. I like that she did the single word as a title, holes, but she focused on the artwork, of the empty spaces of the artwork, and made it about the empty spaces that one feels in their spirit or the empty spaces that one feels in life. And as you mentioned with Lawrence, with that first stanza, it really focuses on how oftentimes we use food and buying things to fill those empty spaces and start to realize that it doesn't work. It's a temporary solution. Turning into the street, I stop beside the gutter, suddenly overfilled with the unbearable sadness of losing a dime. I think those are powerful words, and it makes for a really great metaphor of all those little things that we lose, those brief moments of happiness that just get away from us. And I really also like needing to feel in my bones the rhythmic pulses, the tempered rain on tin roof, soothing the beat of my heart, wanting to go and to expand, to flow through the world. It's that, to me, the whole idea that there's beauty and music out there that just needs to be grasped, but often life just keeps us from being able to do that. So a powerful emotive write and very well done. All right, let's see what we got next. And up next we have 2021 by Namya, and I'll go ahead and give that a read. And it goes like this. Shoulder to shoulder, chest to back, multitude we gather to mourn or to attack. We do not know. We do not know. Hollow eyes focused on different things, not one noticed. An angel with white wings. We failed to see. We failed to see. We stand on this field protesting to the end. Never are we to yield, even when forced to bend. No more, no more. And poem. I have to say, that is just a beautiful and powerful brevity. I like the repetitive line, and I think the title alone just speaks volumes. And Laurent, your thoughts?
That first stanza really refers to what's happening in this country today. Multitude we gather to mourn or to attack. We do not know. We do not know. And it's true. There seem to be so many reasons for those multitudes with their various agendas, beliefs, their hatreds, their lack of understanding, hollow eyes focused on different things. You know, everybody's looking in every direction, and no one notices the angels, the angel with white wings. And there we stand, protesting to the end. We will not yield, even when we're forced to. I like the repetition of we do not know, we fail to see, no more. In 67 words, she's given us 2021 on a plate. Very nice.
Absolutely, yeah. The fact that she gave us such a hectic year, a year that's been of both turbulence and healing in only 67 words, I thought was really great. And wonderful comment there, Laurent. I really like I like this all the way through, but I do like the whole the hollow eyes focus on different things. An angel with white wings, we fail to see, we fail to see. Often because, you know, we don't see those blessings. We don't see the common things that hold us together when we're just too focused on different things. And then never are we to yield, even when forced to bend. I like that. I think that's a strong line in the idea that, you know, don't give up. And, you know, just stay strong. So a powerful rite all the way through and very well done. All right. And let's see. I grabbed next. Oh, yep. All right. Up next we have Statuesque Queen of Australia by Pink Fairy 5. And Laurent, will you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. Statuesque Queen of Australia. Statuesque Queen overlooking pink and blue waters, calming tourists. Anthony Gromley in simple lines, giving back. Placid shorelines, heavenly clouds, embellishes Queen. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. I tell you, there's some wonderful brevities in this contest. I really like with Pink Fairy 5's writing how, and she only 22 words, and she captures, she tells us a story of the artwork, almost like a sense of mythology, Statuesque Queen. But she also pays tribute to the artist himself. The interesting thing about this piece of the statue is it's actually one statue in a piece, artwork display that consists of, okay, I'm blanking out on the number, like 31 or something different statues, all made out of metal. They were all casted from locals within that area of Australia and then made to be thinner. And so what they're actually set up so that when you're standing next to one, you can see not in detail, but you can see the outline, the shadow of the next one that you would approach if you were walking forward. And you know, it just, to me, I do like Pink Fairy oftentimes in her writing. When she writes for contests that I do where I feature artists, or a lot of people do where I feature artists, she'll often give a nod to the artist himself, themselves. And I really like Anthony Gormley in Simple Lines, Giving Back. And I like that, yeah, because he does use in a lot of his work, in this work particularly, very simple lines. And he gives a sense of, I don't know, beauty, and maybe even purpose. Like, you know, I just imagine, like, and this is part of my imagination, but I imagine these local Australians, you know, just pointing to a statue and going, that one I helped make. You know, so just a clever little write and very well done. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
Well, when I looked at this initially, I was mightily impressed. And I'm even a little more impressed now. There is a kind of mythology that excites people when they're in a wild place and they come across something that's not really supposed to be there, like a statue or like a mystic cone or really a piece of art of almost any construction that is unexpected in where it was found, unexpected in what it was trying to say. A little while ago, wasn't there an incidence of these metal pyramids being found all over the world, all similar, just popping up in places where they had no right to be? And it created quite a bit of excitement, lots of stories and what ifs and aliens and whatnot. So initially, that's where this placed in my mind. But then to hear you talk about how it was placed and what it is designed to do, obviously I have to change my mind a little bit, but I still come away from it knowing that Anthony, by placing this statue where he did, has kind of created that, my God, what is this doing here? And I like it.
Yes. Yeah. I like that. I like that you bring up the excitement of discovering something that, you know, not expected. And how, yeah, those kind of stories do really just create that kind of excitement. So really cool observation. And up next we have Graffiti 2 by Diane D. And we have a recording for that one. So, Jean, whenever you're ready.
Graffiti 2 by Diane D. Silenced by natters of crumpled formula, our twisted steel nerves of exposure, flinging silver coil slices intravenously to try comforting in fields of unnatural. Twilight cast shadows on stencils of naked, and buttercup's wings are depraved, flightless and bundled, in neon goosebumps where the seductive graffiti elope. Stunted and chemical are wind-swept forts, where conflict idles and riots. Toss graffiti and embers dappled of guilty, for strands that carry supercharges. Neither stupid simple nor genius divulge authentic ticks of the second hand, but graffiti smears on wooden windshields any time that time stops for awkward. Bleed scrawls on walls of concave hovels that hide books under staircases, and the pen lost its ink in a mystery of psychological gnats that profit nothing. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. I tell you, she just has some of the most intriguing use of imagery within this write. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
Yes, the use of the imagery and the way in which the imagery was delivered almost gave me the feeling of stream of consciousness, but not quite, because it was structured a little more differently than that. The penultimate stanza, neither stupid simple nor genius divulge authentic pics of the second hand, but graffiti smears on wooden windshields any time that time stops for awkward. You get a sense that it doesn't matter whether you're intelligent or not, you can't really delve too deeply into the passage of time, the authentic ticks of the second hand. And when she says wooden windshield, I almost see store windows that have been covered in plywood with graffiti written on them. And that, in a very abstract way, can speak to the passage of time as well. First windows, then wood, then the graffiti. I'll read this again probably a couple more times before I give any kind of a detailed comments in text. It's one of those poems that I'd like to understand a little better.
Absolutely, and I totally get that, because she does use wonderful abstract phrasing that it's beautiful to read, but it doesn't, is that kind of right where you want to delve into it two or three times to fully absorb, and you know. But I like how you talked about the how it expresses the passing of time, and I think that makes a really good point. I really like Twilight Cast Shadows on Stencils of Naked and Buttercup Wings and Prey Flightless and Bundling Neon Goosebumps where Seductive Graffiti Elopes. Now, to me, within this rite, there's such a sense of the beautiful and the ugly together, and how you really sometimes can't tell the difference between one and the other. You know, the idea that, you know, graffiti in artwork can oftentimes be just senseless destruction, and other times it's just absolutely stunning. Stunted and chemical are windswept ports where conflict idols and riots toss graffiti and embers dappled of guilty for strands that carry supercharges. I feel like out of all the stanzas, that one's the most powerful in making a social commentary about how we treat the environment. I could be wrong, but that's just the thought I get from it. But it is definitely one of those rites that not only needs to be read more than once, but should be read more than once simply because of the outstanding beauty of the choice of phrasing. So, excellent rite, and very well done. And let's see what we got next. Up next, we have Pieces by Martha Gettle, and I'll go ahead and give that a read.
Ham.
Yes.
So you know,
yep.
We have a SoundCloud for that. We have an audio.
Okay. I will tell you that I looked at least four times, and the four times I looked, it wasn't there, but I'm glad to see it is there now.
I believe you. I saw it. That's okay.
Cool.
Good.
Well, I appreciate
you
that.
You want me to play it? Okay.
Yes,
here
please.
We go.
Pieces by Martha Gettle. Inside I'm pieces, don't you know? I hardly know where each one goes. Life, it has been so hard, you see. Pieces are all that's left of me. I had true love one time, I know. Then all at once, he had to go. Just more pieces was carved of me when I had to set him free. Though I look all right to someone else, inside I know I'm not myself. End poem.
Great read and write, Martha. Thank you very much. I really like that you wrote this in the rhyming couplets. Yeah, I like that, you know, within this, another wonderful brevity, and in this one, she seems to express that sense. It seems to almost deal with depression or the idea of not knowing yourself. I like it all the way through, but especially just more pieces was carved of me when I had to set him free. So I look all right to someone else inside, I know I'm not myself. The whole idea of having to let somebody go, to losing love, and feeling broken on the inside, and giving that. What I like about this poem is I think it's a familiar feeling to many of us, to feel broken on the inside, but to show a facade, or to be a strong, like solid looking statue on the outside. So I thought this was wonderfully expressed and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it's the masks that we wear to convince other people that, hey, I'm good, while inside the pieces are floating all around. Very few times in my life have I felt solid and whole. More often than not, I do feel like a walking collection of disparate pieces that don't quite know how to cooperate except once in a while. And when they do, wow, it's pretty nice. But most of the time, you got to maintain that solid front, that even strength. Otherwise, you will fly apart. Very great. You know, the brevities tonight have been excellent. And this is another good one.
I have to agree. Yep, absolutely. They have been. All right. And up next, we have The Groundling by Kay Heartless. And Laurent, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, ma'am. Will do. The Groundling. What an idea. I looked at this image and could not for the life of me figure it out. The Groundlings by Kay Heartless. Strip the soil, seed the lawn, leave no footprints, flee by dawn. The groundlings know when you are gone. Hollow eyes harbor disease, mounded heads filled with fleas. The groundlings like to suck and squeeze. Muddy stairs, multitudes, human heels, their favorite food. The groundling loves their footsies nude. Seed the lawn, strip the soil. Make sure that your plants don't spoil. The groundlings rise like backyard boils. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. And you know what? I totally get when you said you looked at this picture or this artwork and didn't get it, because the same thing for me. In fact, I'm going to admit this to you and everybody else. I picked out this contest. I like this guy's artwork, but it wasn't, and I did that about 2 weeks ago or so, and it wasn't until today that I actually realized that those were statues of people without mouths. Like, they're just like heads and eyes and the bodies. And this was a collaborative effort, where they had locals from the area make the individual statues and then put them all together. I actually saw them up until today when I read that as pig snouts. And I think that might have been part of because of the title of it, Fields, and because I grew up where both my grandparents and my parents raised pigs. And to me, you know, like I said, I saw this as pig snouts. I saw there's a whole bunch of pigs, you know, just standing together, you know. So, you know, and that was an excellent read. What I like with Kay Heartless's write is that she tells it the groundlings, and it's all, like, she gives us an almost, like, she gives us a mythological write. And I like that. And the mythological story, in not a particularly long one, and I really like hollow eyes harbor disease, mounded heads filled with fleas, the groundlings like to suck and squeeze. Such a dark light. And it almost, to me, has the idea of, it's the dark right that, you know, gives to me the idea of just that passing along negativity and passing along disease. Feed the lawn, strip the soil, make sure that your plants don't spoil, the groundlings rise like backyard boils. You know, that, you know, you just automatically, I want more. That's the thing with this right. It stands well on its own. It's an excellent brevity, but, you know, I feel like it's almost like a whetting of the appetite, and I'd like to see more stories that involve the groundlings and the battles against them. So that's a wonderful write and very well done. And Lawrence, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, the temptation to write about anything else other than an imaginary creature when you're looking at it as odd a photo as that is, I don't know. I like her approach. You know, magic, mischief, imaginary creatures, fantasy, and then to turn them into evil little things. And they didn't look especially friendly either. Like I said, I couldn't quite figure out what was going on. Thank you for the explanation of people without eyes and why and how, without mouths, excuse me, and how and why they were made. But, yeah, I like the treatment a great deal. You know, a little bit of malevolence. And these things are out there. And I love how she describes what they like. They like to suck and squeeze. They like their footsies nude. And they rise like backyard boils. There's nothing there that's pleasant. It's kind of haunting. I try not to use that word too often, but in this case, yes.
In this case, it definitely works. And, yeah, I have to agree. I think, to me, besides, I like people to be inspired by the artwork without, you know, necessarily too much explanation, but I also like people to understand the artwork or at least understand the artwork as much as possible, which is why I tend to, you know, put links in my contest and talk a lot. I probably talk a little too much about the art and the artist, but... You know, to me, that's always, you know, such an important part of it. So, yeah. And up next, we have 'Cause I Will Stare Back by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. So, yeah, what you gaping at? 'Cause I will stare back. Meanwhile, I'll let the golf waters enjoy my pronounced profile for a while. I'm looking good, a bit dry around the elbows and the humor, but come on. I'm just standing here feeling the clear sky breeze on this cold concrete jetty. I have two-tone hair by choice, and I'm very skinny and all of 60. I used to be about symmetry and lines, words that made sense, six-course meals with fine wines. Now I have this other voice screaming at me for no longer being viable in a youth-hungry society, and I babble back in return. Like popping a pimple, I let my wise old lady thoughts ooze. Even though we know, both know you won't listen, looking at ourselves is sometimes not only the hardest but the best thing we can do for everyone. That's cool. I've been taking notes this whole time, you sniveling little child. You'll never be able to do what I did, what I've done. Hell, you don't even know how. And you've only begun to feel the hurt of this, the brutal wild that just for you is waiting. Who's taking notes now? Who, the devil, is laughing now? End poem. I tell you, she does just have some clever humor within her lines, and very biting. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
Well, it does seem as if today's youth hasn't gone through the kind of pain and frustration and life-changing events that a lot of older people have. They're somewhat coddled. There's no draft to worry about. They have their phones, their electronics. They're probably less political and much more social media savvy. And if and when problems arise, it's obvious that the author does not believe they have the capacity to survive the problems and deal with them the way she did. I like this look of the old, but not too old, the older person kind of laughing at today's youth. It works for me very well. Nice poem by Julie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like how this takes on the voice of talking to somebody who's younger and sees things differently. And, it does, I like how she shares thoughts with us, like looking at ourselves is sometimes not the only the hardest, but the best thing we can do for everyone. I think she makes a really important point there about how we really need to observe and know ourselves. So excellent write and very well done. And let's grab the next one. And looking. All right, I have another one here. But now where to go to? Sorry. Here we go. All right. All right. Up next, we have Soulless Identity by Ennis Richard. And Laurent, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yep. Soulless Identity. A skillfully crafted figure fit for a gallery. Unengaged and unconcerned, like apathy, transparently empty, yet present as harmony. A conceptual math equation, the final product of creative inspiration, an unambiguous artistic presentation. Mounted and motionless, unable to rise, a huge undertaking, an impressive enterprise, gracefully dubious, yet tangibly discernible, lifeless and soulless, yet immediately identifiable. End poem.
Great read, Lauren. I have to say, I'm fairly new to getting to know Ennis's poetry, and I've really been appreciating it. This poem, like many of his, has just a wonderful meter and flow to it. I like that it pays tribute to the artwork, and I like that he brings mathematics, and I actually am horrible with mathematics. I just have my brain shuts down when it comes to doing mathematics, but I have an appreciation for how much a part of art and music and life in general that it is. And so I really like a conceptual mathematical equation, the final product of creative inspiration. And what I like about that line is it reminds us that both math, science, and creativity can be used together to create art, to create poetry and music. And I also like the line, gracefully dubious yet tangibly discernible, lifeless and soulless yet immediately identifiable. Because though it's not a full human form, we identify it as a human form crouching down. There's something about the artwork that he captures in those lines that does have an identifiable emotion, such as loneliness. So just a wonderful write and very well done. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
Pam, a quick question on the figure. Do you know its relative size?
It's 50 meters, but I don't know what meters is in feet.
15 meters?
50.
50? Wow.
Yep.
That'd be about 60 feet.
Okay,
we're talking here about something very, very large, out of scale. By looking at it here, I couldn't figure out the scale. Once we know that this is actually a huge figure, I can understand the mounted and motionless, unable to rise, a huge undertaking, an impressive enterprise, gracefully dubious, yet tangibly discernible, lifeless and soulless, yet immediately identifiable. I think that describes it absolutely perfectly, especially given the size. And yeah, I like your comment about mathematics yielding art. There's a lot of people who would say that ultimately mathematics is art. If you get it right down to the fractals and everything else, it's a great piece.
Absolutely. And yeah, this both this and the Angel of the North. The Angel of the North is 5 feet shorter than this one. But they're both like were really huge undertakings. So great comment there. And up next we have Colored Conscience by Victoria Frost. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. Within vibrant arching hallways, I'm stalked by demons, meeting my gaze from the corner of my eyes. These are the moments I fear, not the ghosts trapped in time, wailing woes to unwilling ears, nor the monsters of childhood, lurking in the shadows, midnight-flooded halls. Rather, it is the face that gazes back, streaming out the darkest parts of me, memories I've attempted to erase, yet they remain, unfazed, untouched, waiting for the day they break out of their cage. Until then, they bid their time, as my reflection glaring back. End poem. I have to say, that's just a beautiful and emotionally charged write. Very well done there. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
The use of the reflection again is very important in this. The moments that are feared when you're stalked by demons or ghosts trapped in time, wailing woes to unwilling ears, nor the monsters of childhood, all of those things she fears, but not especially as much as the face that gazes back, screaming out the darkest parts of me, memories I've attempted to remain. You know, it's a reflection. It's got to be her face. And inside, those things are waiting for the day to break out. But until then, they bide their time as my reflection glaring back. It's really a wonderfully done, what do I want to say? It's a very well done look at what is inside all of us and how we look back from places of discomfort, holding in check the things that we fear. I thought it was well done.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, Victoria was one of the first ones I shared the idea for doing this contest, and she was immediately drawn to that piece of artwork, so I'm glad she was inspired to write for it. And you're right, Lawrence, the reflection part of the statue, the reflection that comes from the rainwater flooding into that cathedral, is as important a part of the artwork as the statue itself. And I like that she, focuses in on that within her right and sees it as a metaphor for the reflecting inward on ourselves, reflecting on our own fears that change, as we become older, that are always there, and yet sometimes they take a front seat and sometimes they take a back seat. And I really like this all the way through, but I like especially rather it is the face that gazes back, streaming out the darkest parts of me, memories I've attempted to erase yet remain. Sometimes it's such a struggle to let go of those memories that haunt us. Just beautifully written and very well done. And our last poem for the night will be Galilee Didn't Change the Moon by Chamath Akalanka. And Lawrence, will you give that a read for us, please?
I will. Galileo didn't change the moon. The moon changed Galileo and the world forever. Still hid behind a bush, this time still insisting that our heads be buried inside the still earth, a peach that a finger pushed dangles in the air, and its juices drip, and at the turning point of the arch, a still looks at the moon. Still, with the earth worn rug over us, we inspect the delicacy of butterflies inside jam bottles, and to keep the streams of running water without, we are struggling with our ears on the clay earth. Jaded through the passage of time, our rusty laugh hides from us the freshness of a morn, with it the delicacy of a lake, the magnificence of the aurora, the scent of the possibility, the immensity of the earth. We've forgotten since what we are, like what finds plants, immobile, with our ears set, wandering, halted, and poem.
Great read, Laurent. I'm not really sure which prompt this was written to, but I did think it had some just beautiful, creative, and intriguing imagery. I really liked the opening where the moon changed Galileo and the world forever, the idea that Galileo did not change the moon. And also, like, jaded through the passage of time, our rusty laugh hides from the freshness of the morn with the delicacy of a lake, the magnificence of the aurora. There's almost this idea of not taking time to appreciate the beauty of nature, that, you know, the idea that we need to just kind of be still and appreciate. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, importantly, I think the use of the word jaded in the last stanza, jaded to the passage of time, our rusty laughs. A rusty laugh is not a laugh that's used frequently. We've lost some of that wonderful innocence of childhood, and we have become jaded, and we no longer look at the freshness of a morn or the delicacy of a lake or the magnificence of the aurora, and I'm struck by that one phrase, the scent of the possibility. You know, and to compare us to plants, immobile, static, unmoving, with our ears set, we no longer wander. To me, the poem is a great poem, great reference to Galileo that you made a moment ago, Pam. I like this one very, very much.
Absolutely, and I like that you brought that line, the scent of possibility, because that was a really great line there, so very well said. All right, well, join us if you can, anybody, 30 minutes from this show for Late Nights with the Midnight Bomber with Neutron Bomb and Captain B2. And I'd like to say thank you to Jean for everything she does. I always appreciate you. And thank you, Laurent, Tom, and Kathy, for calling in, especially you, Laurent, hanging out the whole time. I really appreciate you. And thank you to Robbie and Naomi for holding the board, to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now or will be listening later. You know, these shows just wouldn't be the same without you. And just really, absolutely, you know, appreciate you. I say appreciate too much, but I do. I just can't. It's just difficult to express how thankful I am every week for the people that I get to work with and be friends with. And then tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, join Fill My Eyes and Company for The Art of Seduction. And she has a nice, fun show that's lined up with some great quality seductive rights. And all right, everyone, have a good night.
Great prompts, Pam. Great show.
Good night,
Thank
Pam.
You.
Good night, guys.